Greetings, troubled listeners. Welcome back to the Troubled Men Podcast. I am Renee Komen, sitting once again in Snake and Jake's Christmas Club Lounge in the heart of the Klempire, with my co-host, the original troubled man for troubled times and future mayor of New Orleans, Mr. Manny Chevrolet. Welcome, Manny.
Hey, man. That's right. You know, I am the future. I am the future. Qualifying is in less than a few weeks.
And, okay. You've made a decision?
I am thinking about it. Okay. I've got, there's a three-day window in the second week of July that I have to do it, but I can't do it alone. I need people's help.
Sure.
You know, just like I need help.
Just in general,
I need help. In fact, I remember, this is how bad it got for me, or it has been for me, is like the first time I went to a psychiatrist, he said, "Where you been? What took you?" You know? So that's the kind of help I need. But
right.
I think we're going to go for it, but I need people's help, and we'll see what happens.
I still like the idea. You said you might run for mayor. I meant for sheriff, though.
I said that. I was thinking about it when that whole shit was going down with the
escape. You with a tin star on your shirt.
Yeah, that would have been cool. It would have been
new sheriff
in
town.
Slogan would have been, what was that slogan I came up with? Vote Manny Chevrolet for sheriff. Oh, God, I'll think of it. About a man who shouldn't have a gun.
Yeah.
Could you run for both?
I don't know. That's a good question. Maybe you could. I don't see why not. You know, I don't see why you can't run for both.
Have to make sure you go over that federal election regulations with a fine-tooth comb. You don't want to get sideways with those again.
Yeah, I don't want to get sideways.
Well, there's the old joke, like, he couldn't run for dog catcher. Do they have could you run for,
do they have a duck?
No. Do not think.
Maybe I should just say,
When
I become mayor, we're going to have a dog catcher.
Okay, that's going to be part of your platform.
Yeah, part of the platform. Get a dog catcher. Yeah, so it's going to be exciting. And, you know, yesterday marked the day that LaToya, our fearless leader here, has 200 more days in office.
Wow.
That's it. 200 more days. And I guarantee you, you're not going to hear from her.
She'll be globetrotting.
On our dimes, on our taxpayer dimes.
Yep.
Exactly, on all our dimes and stuff like that. And like that, those 50 cent pieces we got last week, too. She's probably got those, too. Anyway, what else is going on?
Oh, it's just, settling down. I was saying last week how, you could really feel the summer coming down upon us. Now, I played a gig at the Kingpin from 5 to 7 this past Saturday. It was so hot. By the time I was done, my clothes were soaked all the way through. I had another job later on. I had to go home, take all my clothes off, dry off, and put new underwear on, new socks, everything.
Well, that's right. The King, you put it right in front of the bar, right? That's where you guys play.
Yeah.
On the outside.
On the outside.
Oh, God, that must have been miserable.
It was hot. I mean, we had a nice little turnout, but we were all wilting out there, man.
Oh, God.
And then I was driving to my second gig at Chickiwawa later. I'm coming down the Broad Street overpass, and you can't even see a car. It's so empty. You could have shot a cannon down down Broad Street and not hit anybody. So yes, we're into the
it's hot, man.
The official doldrums of misery.
Yes.
That line, "I feel summer creeping in and I'm tired of this town again."
Right.
That's the Tom Petty. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the way I feel every fucking summer down here. But speaking of sweating and all that, you missed it over the weekend. They had the sunburn competition over in the Lakeview.
Oh, really?
It was for whites only.
Haven't heard of that.
Yeah, the sunburn competition, which was sponsored by Coppertone. And some of the winners, man, they look like, Robert Redford, in every picture you've seen of him since the 90s.
So really, people are out there trying to get a bad sunburn? Gee whiz. Yeah.
If you're flaking, is that like a next level?
Whoever had the most burn, guess one. It was a whites only thing because they're the only ones who really burn.
Oh, everybody burns. You can't see it as
less melanin.
Yeah.
The winner looked like a California raisin.
Oh, jeez.
It was sponsored by, I don't know what the prize was, though. I really don't know what the prize was.
Big bottle
was.
Of, aloe.
Yeah.
Aloe vera, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. But they had like volleyball competitions and stuff like that.
I totally missed out on
yeah,
that.
Yeah, well, I just saw pictures.
Okay.
And they weren't too pretty.
Yeah, no, I bet they weren't.
It's like those old women, you know, who still want to go braless and stuff. They're shriveled up boobs and stuff like that. And it just kind of, it's like, oh.
Well, maybe know, some... Go ahead.
Yeah, no, well, that's the old joke. You know, you rarely see any skinny people at nudist camps. You know.
Yeah. Same with the orgies. It's always the people you don't want to see naked.
Right. Exactly. Like the naked bike race they have down here.
Yeah. Right. Well, I was thinking maybe people got a little jump on the sunburn competition during the naked bike ride.
I don't know. I don't know. But they're good people.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. Well, they're turning out to you know,
to support something.
Do something. Yeah. A little fellowship there.
We'll do anything in this town.
Right.
You know. But go ahead.
Well, we talked a lot about the Diddy trial before the lead up to it, and then once they started having testimony, I noticed that we never mentioned it again. And I was thinking, why was that? I think because all the testimony, everything was so sordid. It just like we didn't even want to bring it up. And
I told you I had to testify. They did me on via the Zoom.
Oh, okay.
I testified, and I had to say some things that weren't pretty.
Yeah,
but it's the truth. The truth isn't pretty.
And I mentioned the Sunburn Festival at the same time.
Okay,
but yeah, it was the truth. And we'll see. His defense didn't call any witnesses.
Yeah,
at all. That's
kind of, I don't know. Maybe they're just like, fuck it. You can rot in here, buddy. I don't know.
Well, I mean, he obviously didn't want to expose himself. He didn't want to testify.
Well, he already exposed himself.
Yeah, he did it many, many times.
Right, anymore. Yeah.
to
a cross-examination.
Yeah, no, he didn't want to do that. No. But everything's going crazy. You know, our fearless leader is, he's going nuts. I he's just... weird, this guy. And he's I didn't realize that all these new appointees he has, you know.
Uh-huh.
Like, you know, we're having this war now. Uh-huh. You know, he's bombed what is it, the Middle East, somewhere like that.
Iran
and
Persia.
You know, now people are scared that Iran's going to start, you know, waging a war in our own, you know, they're going to put out their little spies they have here.
Well, Sean Hannity says there's assassination squads all over the, just waiting for their...
But then I've realized that Trump's appointee to his War on Terror committee is this like 22-year-old kid named Thomas Fugatti, who was just an intern for him.
Yeah.
The last,
he's played a lot of Risk, though.
Yeah, he's played a lot of Risk and Clue. And, you know, but apparently he just came out today and he said that his first act as, you know, as the head of terror defense is to start attacking. Terror is to start with our haunted houses here.
Okay.
He's going to do that. Our haunted houses is the first
thing. Watch out this October.
Yeah, you know, exactly.
They are terrifying sometimes.
You know, they can be, man. I don't know.
Yeah.
And then he's got a new guy he appointed to FEMA. You know, because now we're in hurricane season.
I thought he eliminated FEMA.
Well, he did, but then he brought it back because he doesn't know what the hell he's doing. You know.
Wait, undo that.
Yeah, and this new chief was confused. He said he was confused by the wind because he couldn't see it.
Yeah.
So.
I can't see it. Is it real?
Yeah, it's not real if I can't see it, basically. You know, so we've got some great leaders out there, man. I'm telling you, you know, they're all right.
I don't know. keep your fingers crossed, people. You know, can't wait till it's 200 days to the end of that administration that will. Now, so there's been some other news. Something close to home for you, Manny. Your beloved Lakers were sold.
Oh yeah.
Now, do you have any thoughts about that?
Well, you know, it happens. People sell teams. Sell properties, and it's the most ever. Something like $10 billion.
Right.
For a sports franchise, and they're worth it. You know, they're worth it. But I mean, Jerry Buss took over a franchise back in 79, I think, when he bought it from Jack Kent Cook. And Jack Kent Cook didn't want to pay the high prices that he saw coming in the future. But Jerry wasn't...
For talent, you mean?
Yeah, for talent. Uh-huh. And he had won his championship. And he also was a Washington Redskins owner, football team. And he stayed with them until he sold them after a Super Bowl win. But, going back to my Hollywood days, you know, Jerry Buss, man, that guy was a player, baby.
Yeah, that's what I hear.
In fact, you know, we've spoken about my band, the Two Free Stooges, right, and stuff over the years, and we used to have our background dancers dressed as nurses.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a couple of them. I'm not going to give their names, or you know, but you know, we used to have different ones, you know, pretty much like every other show or whatever. We have some different nurses. And we had these two nurses who were hired monthly by Jerry Buss to go over to his house and just dance naked in front of him. Okay. He just liked watching them dance naked.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, that guy got around. And I remember seeing Jerry Buss at a Laker game with Sammy Davis Jr.
Okay.
There.
Candy,
you know,
man.
But he, yeah, the candy man. And I mean that, man. but they were great. And Jerry was a good guy. He brought Showtime to the Lakers. Not
yeah.
only on the court, but, you know, behind the scenes and stuff like
right.
that. So, yeah, it happens. But I think Ginny Buss, who is still going to have some kind of control, apparently.
Huh, okay.
The Dodgers owner bought the majority percentage of the team. But the Buss family still has some kind of insight to it, or kind of say, I guess.
Right,
they
right.
get a vote.
So there's no danger of the team moving.
Oh, no, no, that's not going to happen.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
No,
I mean,
no.
I didn't know who bought it. I didn't know the Dodgers guy that bought the team.
Maybe they'll move into a better arena. But
yeah,
not,
okay.
They're not leaving L.A. No,
right.
No, that's not going to happen. You'd see, you thought the Rodney King riot.
Yeah.
Ramos beware.
Exactly. No. That would be sacrilege, you know. But anyway, yeah, so that's something to happen. And shit, man, $10 billion. I can't even imagine that, man. You know. But apparently when you buy a franchise, you're like, you buy the team. You buy the contracts. You buy all the equipment is mm-hmm. now yours. You own it, from the towels to
right.
the sneak. You know, you own everything. So I guess the $10 billion adds up. You know?
Yeah, I think it's probably most of that $10 billion is just in the value of
salaries.
The yeah, well, the value.
Well, yeah, just the ability to merchandise and all that stuff. You know, ability to get television contracts and, you know, the earning potential.
Well, the NBA, though, does have problems. They're still second to the NFL, but their TV contract is souring, I think. They don't get...
Because their season's too fucking long, just like baseball season's too fucking long. You lose interest after
play too many games.
Oh, yeah, because they have to because of the salaries.
Right, right.
You know, guys making $80 billion a year or $80 million a year.
Sure,
they want their money's worth.
Yeah, exactly. You know. So anyway, it's all good, you know. We'll see if they can. LeBron, though, is not, I think LeBron's going to retire.
Yeah.
I think he's going to say, this is it. I've had it. I'm done. I'm going into the movie business.
Now, you think they'll keep his son on the team?
Work for Shaq.
Yeah. That I don't know. I mean, they might keep him on, but the problem is he's not very good.
Right, that's what I hear.
Nepotism.
He's all right, you know. He's tall.
Yeah.
You know, but he's just not. He's not NBA material like his dad, you know. Anyway, but so we'll see what happens with that. I'm interested now in the WNBA because they're in full swing.
Okay.
And I just love watching those women run up and down the court. And They get very chippy, these women.
Yeah, I've seen gouging each other's eyes,
yeah.
grabbing hair, slamming people to the ground.
It's like cat fight.
Yes.
Cat fight. Yeah, baby.
Not
cat
quite
fight.
Hockey level, but it's
no, not well, not yet.
Yeah,
I mean. You know, but we'll see. The only problem is they don't have a very good TV contract, so it's hard to watch their games.
Right,
but it's getting better.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so what? That's
if that, Caitlin that's, Clark is playing, then you have a chance
Caitlin
of catching
Clark.
It on television.
Yeah, that's true. Yes, but anything else going on with you?
Well, the only other thing I have is you know, just keeping tabs on, you know, a story that we had weeks and weeks ago. Now maybe 6 weeks. The two Orleans Parish jail escapees who are still on the loose.
I didn't realize there were still two out there.
Still out there, yeah. Still out there on the streets.
The ringleader, the guy who masterminded the whole thing. He's still out there, and he's got tats on his face, so I don't know how they can't notice that.
Makeup. He just covers it with makeup.
No, I don't think so. And then he keeps showing up on social media. He's on YouTube making videos.
He's saying, like, come on, get me. Fuck you, find me.
He's taunting them.
Yeah, he's taunting them. Why not? You know? Fuck that. And the other guy, don't know. I don't see anything on him.
He's gone to ground, yeah.
Yeah, he's underground somewhere, but...
might be in the French Riviera. Yeah.
Could be anywhere at this point, man. Either one of those guys could be...
They
fucking,
could.
You know,
I
any.
Doubt it very much, but
yeah,
they could
think
be.
I think they're probably over in the St. Bernard area.
Yeah. They could be, you know, in this lot across the way.
Yeah.
Sure.
I mean,
yeah, well,
that house is abandoned, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. That one. That wasn't, what's his name, staying there for a while?
Jimmy Chubbuck, yeah. Jim, yeah.
What have happened to that guy?
You know, he just, speaking of going to ground, I haven't heard a hide nor a hair of him.
Because we were trying to get him on the show, right?
Yeah, we were. And then. You know, he started getting a little uppity about it. You know, like, well, I don't want to come off like I'm so down and out. I was like, but you are.
You're the real troubled man.
What do you mean?
You're the troubledest of all of us.
Yeah. So I don't know. It's shout out to Jimmy Chubbuck if he's still out there. We'll have to ask Dave if he comes around.
Dave's
If he's heard, Dave's still up on the roof.
He's on that house over there.
Oh,
doing
okay.
Something. I don't
he's
know.
He's got
what the hell
so
he's
many properties. He's got so much stuff to do.
Yeah. He's hammering away at the coin pile.
Sell them out. Sell them all before you get too old. That's what I told him, but he doesn't listen to me. So, anyway, let's introduce our guest because he's already talking and he won't shut up.
Yeah.
You know, and got a lot of questions for him.
Okay, very good. All right. Well, it's a guest. We've seen him around town for a long time. Just we're hanging out at the bar here just a couple of nights ago, and look at that, the quick turnaround we have you on the show so quickly. He's a terrific filmmaker, director, screenwriter, also a firefighter. Interesting combo. Also a former public high school teacher. His latest film, The Great Davini, stars Snake and Jake's own mastermind and czar of the Klempire, Dave Clements.
Yep.
He's made all kind of films, videos, shorts, is a world traveler, going to get into all that. But without further ado, the great Mr. Jason Alfolder.
Yeah, Jason Affolder. Yeah.
Affolder, sorry.
You added an L. But
I know,
hey, it's
I
not
know.
Like high school where it'd be like assholder or ass.
Well, I was wondering about that.
Yeah, oh, it was fun.
Welcome,
anyway,
Jason.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, you know, I've never seen that name before.
It's German as far as I know.
Okay.
I've never delved into it, but I'm from Indiana, and there's Affolders all around Indiana.
Really?
Yeah, there's like
interesting.
A pretty big like tractor supply company that's Affolder Industries or something like that anyway.
Yeah, probably not a lot of Boudreaux or
nope.
Yeah, up there. So, it depends on where you are, you know, you get these.
What part of Indiana?
I'm from Vincennes in southern Indiana, which is like a really old city that's like kind of insignificant, but it's known because it was, let me see if I can figure this do this right. It's the site of a major Revolutionary War battle in which George Rogers Clark and his ragtag band of militiamen defeated the British at Fort Sackville with the help of a fat Sardinian fur trader named Francis Vigo.
Wow.
And there's a gigantic national monument on the river there. It's the biggest monument outside of Washington, D.C.
Which Trump's going to remove.
I don't know, or put his name on it. It's like, you know, it's this now the Trump Memorial in Vincennes, Indiana. But for some reason, like, it I hear that the war might have actually already been won
when he
won his battle.
Right.
And they just hadn't gotten word yet.
Sure.
But anyway, because of that incident, there's this massive memorial there in a town that's otherwise totally insignificant. So, yeah.
And okay.
But you're from there, so it is significant.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good place to be from because there's nothing to do going on. It builds character. But I wouldn't recommend people go there.
Yeah, yeah. Nothing to see there except for the monument.
There's a great pizzeria that it's like been around since 1955.
So where is
that's
that like... Like Indianapolis. Where
it's
southwest.
It's right on the Illinois state line. Okay. And there's actually two time zones. So if the bars close at 2 a.m. in Vincennes, you can drive 5 minutes across the river and they're open for another hour because you're in a different time zone.
Is it near Gary?
No, it's the south. Gary's basically Chicago. This is way down by Kentucky.
Okay, gotcha.
Like an hour and a half.
And where is South Bend?
It's all north.
That's all north. All
there's,
right, yeah.
In southern Indiana, I mean, Bloomington is south of Indy. That's where I use that. And then Vincennes, Evansville, Terre Haute's where ISU was at. But, yeah.
Now, why were your parents there?
They just grew up there. I mean, our ancestors.
So their parents went there.
And didn't leave.
Yeah. I mean, because, you know, all these Affolders came from Germany or wherever and settled, you know, in Indiana.
Now, is it
and
farming or is it?
There's a lot of
factories?
Really, this is a final Jeopardy question. There's a lot of soybean fields there.
Oh.
You know, cornfields because, there's more than corn in Indiana. And there are cornfields, but there's a lot of soybeans and hog farms and tornadoes, a lot of tornadoes. Like every town around Vincennes has been destroyed by a tornado in my lifetime, but Vincennes has always like dodged the bullet.
Because of the Affolders.
I don't know. It's just in
They're
like a little bit of a divot
of a fucking tornado.
Yeah. Many times as a child, the civil defense sirens would go off, and you'd have to go like hide in your tub because a tornado was coming, but it never quite reached
us. So you guys didn't have like a tornado cellar or something?
We didn't. Some people do. We did not. We just went in the basement.
You never got a day off of school. Because
we did have to hide in the stairwells. One night I was in the roller, when they still had roller rinks, yeah. I was like in an all-night skate at the roller dome. Like, we all had to hide because a tornado was coming, and it's like, is it going to destroy the roller dome with all these children? We were like in the middle of the limbo, you know, on skates competition, and it's like, get to the inside structure. So that's Indiana for you. Small Vincennes.
Okay,
you
know. So growing up there, you always looked forward to leaving?
Well, yeah, once I knew I wasn't going to college anywhere in Indiana, so, you know.
Because you didn't play basketball.
Yeah, my mom, like, she finally gave up saying, like, I just wish you'd play basketball. Because I'm a nerd. I want to play Dungeons & Dragons, read Stephen King novels.
Oh, I gotcha.
You
know?
So that's what you were doing in high school, so.
And then I got a little edgier in high school. I started making bombs and stuff. Like, we'd make, like, black powder bombs get into chemistry.
Trenchcoat mafia kind of deal?
No, this is before. The whole thing is, like, back then you could do that, and it was just kind of, like, fun. Now you'd be labeled, like, a domestic terrorist immediately.
Right.
But it was all in good fun for us.
Yeah, because boys like fire. We like
burning
things blowing
ants.
Up.
Yeah,
exactly.
It's natural.
So.
It doesn't have to be antisocial. We just like the way it looks.
Again, nothing else to do. So it's
sure.
Like there was no internet. So you just like, let's go burn something or blow something up.
And okay. The girls weren't around for you either.
Yeah, there was never that like manic pixie girl that was like into Dungeons and Dragons like you see in movies where like the one cute girl wants to hang out with the nerds. It was just a bunch of nerds.
That's how it always is in real life.
So
you didn't go to many dances?
No, I actually didn't go to my high school prom because my best friends were from another school and they weren't allowed to go, so I'm like, we'll just go be punks and do bad stuff.
To the roller rink.
I don't want to incriminate myself too much. Rink. But there was like this weird arcade that we go to called Free Play where like all the games were obviously free once you paid $5 to get in. But there was like this little theater off to the side where they show like old Popeye and like Betty Boop cartoons. And that's where the kids went to make out. So you'd like go in and like see all these like 15 to 18 year olds like making out in the dark while like Popeye is playing.
Popeye's trying to make olive oil.
That's
olive oil.
Yeah.
She was attractive.
She had the whole family was castor oil. And, all her siblings had the same name. Anyway. So yeah, Vincennes.
So are you during that time? Are you with all these trying to entertain yourself? Are you starting to do any film work? You have a Super
actually,
8 camera or something?
I was more of the VHS kid.
Sure.
But a couple projects in high school where we were actually encouraged to do like a video, and that's really kind of where I got to actually in German class. We made this like epic 1 hour film about. There's this story about this guy that chugged a giant stein of beer in Germany to like save the town, and so in German class we basically made this detective story about the stein's been stolen. It's this relic. And like these two like, you know, kind of scummy detectives played by teenagers, obviously, like go on the hunt. And
stein.
Yeah, it's called Schreck and Grimmel in the case of the stolen stein. I think I have it somewhere. It's not totally lost on video, but it's pretty entertaining to rewatch for me. I think anybody else would find it incredibly
cool. Did you get graded on it?
Yeah, we got an A for that one. It was because everybody else had like a 5-minute video and we launched this like mini epic. You know, and it was completely inappropriate. Like there was foul language and like blood and gore and, you know.
Excellent.
But, you know, it was such a ambitious project. They kind of couldn't ignore it.
Well, I remember my high school class, we told our teacher for our final we wanted to show this film.
Uh-huh.
And he said, okay, fine, you can show this film. And we shot it on Super 8.
Mm.
And we had three screens, though. We had the film in the middle screen, and the screen to the left and to the right, we had slides. And basically what we did was we filmed all the hip people in school.
Yeah.
All the in kids, because I went to West LA High School.
Oh, okay.
A lot of Beverly Hills kids.
Yeah.
Bel Air, you know, Pacific Palisades kids go there. So you had all these beautiful people.
Mm-hmm.
And what we did was, we just, in the middle screen on the Super 8, we just shot all the beautiful people on campus or outside campus. You know, we shot them. And we had one of the guys who we did the film with, his friend Danny Zimmerman, his dad was a plastic surgeon. So on the right and left screen, we had slides showing deformities.
Oh.
Deformed people.
This sounds like a pretty awesome experimental film for high school.
And, And then the music was, "You are so beautiful to me, can't you see?" And it was so funny because some of the girls in the class were in the film.
Uh-huh.
And they're so fucking ditzy and super. Goes, "Oh, look, there's
it's
Nancy.
Me, it's me.
Yeah, there's me." While there's like
not
a picture
realizing
of,
you're being mocked.
Yeah, yeah, there's a fucking guy, a girl with a deformity, no lips or whatever, that kind of stuff. And the teacher was like, "Well, what are you trying to say here?" And we're like, "Well, it's pretty obvious what we're trying to say here." So we got like a B.
Oh, man. Oh, geez.
That's Hollywood.
Did that raise my grade up?
Oh, yeah.
From a D minus or something. Yeah.
Past the
so
class.
Anyway, yeah, films awesome. Are always fun.
You don't have that copy of that, though. It's lost to the ages.
No, I think Danny Zimmerman, I still have that copy. I have no idea. I don't know, but somebody has it.
So you make this epic. And you think, oh, this is something I could do. Is that give you the idea that you would want to pursue this seriously?
I was kind of into video games as well, and a lot of the video games in that era were narrative. So I don't know, just like, and I really started to get into film.
So how old are you?
I'm 47.
Okay, so you're a lot younger than us.
Yeah.
So when
this is like mid to late 90s.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay. So yeah.
And that's like when the kind of indie film explosion happened with movies like Clerks and Reservoir Dogs.
Right.
Stuff like that. So, even though they were indie films, they would play. We'd still have to drive an hour to go see them, but you could actually see like these indie films, and it was like, oh, you can just make a movie. So.
Well, that's it. When video came out, it was like anyone could be a filmmaker.
Yeah. But especially in that era, that's when like, because the 80s still were like mostly big Hollywood movies, but then in the 90s, that's when Miramax and even, this is the thing, Harvey Weinstein's a scumbag, but you can't really boycott all his work. You would have to eliminate most of the catalog of like, important independent films in the 90s.
Right.
Kevin Smith and Tarantino didn't do anything bad, but they were financed by the scumbag.
Yeah.
So anyway, so that was just kind of inspirational seeing all those kind of films come out of nowhere. And then,
any directors in particular that you really, wanted to emulate or?
I really like Scorsese, 70 Scorsese movies, like Taxi Driver. And at the time, I loved Blade Runner. I mean, I still love Blade Runner, but it was more like, I loved Western, Sam Peckinpah, really a lot of late 60s, 70s American cinema was really.
Now, are you seeing that growing up at home on TV? Or
that's all VHS.
You're just going searching.
There were a couple great VHS video stores that they'd been open since the invention of VHS. So they had, and it's not like now, obviously you can watch anything you want anytime, but
Did you work at Blockbuster?
No. I worked at the movie theater in town, but not the video store.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, just seeing all those movies was really inspirational. And then, at the time, USC and NYU were the best film schools. So I just applied to them and I got a USC first. So I just withdrew my application at the other. And, I wanted to go somewhere big too. I wanted to be away from Tiny Vincent's and that's as far west.
I was on the waiting list for UCLA film school.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah.
But I never got,
I don't remember why I didn't apply there. I think it was just.
It's a good film school, too.
Oh, yeah, of course. They're rivals, but, But, USC took me, and I was
So were you living on campus and stuff?
Yeah, the first 2 years I lived on campus, and then I moved to Los Feliz.
Los Feliz, sorry.
I've been in the South so long, I mispronounce everything.
Isn't USC kind of freaky because it's like this very rich private school, and it's in the shittiest neighborhood?
They call it the University of South Central because it is
it's in the shittiest neighborhood.
It's basically a perimeter wall, and if you go outside of that, to go to the post office, you have to go through the war zone.
Yeah, exactly. It's just so freaky.
Yeah, and again, it's really wealthy, student body, but they're planted in kind of a bad spot.
Oh, yeah.
But again, I don't know how much it's changed. Even when I go back to L.A., I don't go there very often.
Oh, it's still expensive.
But I meant if the neighborhood's gentrified around it or if it's still kind of sketchy.
Maybe got a little bit. No, I mean, it's maybe a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
Since the riots, maybe. Yeah. Not much.
So how was your experience there at USC?
USC taught me a lot about what I didn't want to do. Because, a lot of people go through there and end up making big Hollywood movies and stuff. And I just I actually got kind of disillusioned at that kind of attitude they were promoting. And I got into a lot of still photography classes. But at a certain point when you're doing independent study, photography can be film. So I was making experimental films for photography classes that I found a lot more, interesting than like kind of narrative stuff that they were like, because, and also as an undergrad there, I don't know if the program's different, but you make like, you make 5 Super 8 films for one class in one semester. That's like super creative. Like every 2 weeks you have to make a movie.
Mm-hmm.
But then after that, you make 1 16 millimeter film with a partner. If you're, yeah, and then after that, if you're not lucky to get picked one of your scripts or as a director, you might never make like a really solid like 10 or 15 minute movie that's your own. Like most film programs, you have a thesis at the end of the 4-year program. USC didn't do that. I was luckily involved in one of them. I wrote it. I didn't direct it. But like it, I was just kind of like, you know, there's only 4 of these projects each semester and there's like dozens of students. So like,
right,
it was just sort of like, even if film schools like, you know, UNO, like everybody that goes there makes a thesis film before they get their degree.
Right.
So I just found, you know, I learned a lot, but I also thought for the, what it would cost most people, cause I had a scholarship. That's the other thing. Like everything was covered. That was incredible.
Nice.
Like,
so you went through the full 4 years?
Yeah. The only reason I did that is because I was lucky, because a lot of my friends dropped out because of the sheer cost of tuition.
Right.
But I was like, this is a free ride. I'm going to get this piece of paper. It's going to... And, well, it did give me a 5% raise with the city of New Orleans, because anybody with a 4-year degree got a 5% raise.
So that's finally like, paid off.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. And I was able to do other stuff, like when I taught and stuff, you needed like a basic 4-year degree.
Right.
But
right.
Yeah, I mean, the whole thing is like L.A., it just wasn't my favorite place. I loved everything around it. I loved sunrises in the Mojave Desert and like getting stuck in a blizzard in the Sequoia Forest and riding horses on the beaches of Baja California. But just like the moving traffic, you know, parking lot of traffic in LA, and just, right, you know, it just wasn't, if Vincennes was too small, then LA was too big, right, you know? So
I see.
Well, so, did you wind up doing like working in the film business out there, TV business?
A little bit, like, you know, I did a lot of set construction and did some PA work and stuff. But then once I graduated, I was just like, I got to get out of here.
Really?
And luckily a couple of my other friends were all graduating at the same time. So we were like talking about going to Chicago or New Orleans. And I basically just watched Down by Law, the Jim Jarmusch movie, too many times. And it's like, let's go to New Orleans, you know, okay, this is going to be great. Even though like the last semester I was in USC for New Year's, I was here for, we came to New Orleans for New Year's, and I got arrested on New Year's Eve.
Oh,
because,
man,
right before midnight, this guy was getting his ass kicked by the cops on Bourbon Street, and I was filming it with a Super 8 camera, and the cop knocked his own hat off. He was being so violent. So I picked up his hat to film his badge number, and that's right when his backup showed up. And so they got me for theft and possession of stolen property and public intox, and threw me in the clink. So I spent 1999 to 2000's New Year's Eve, the turn of the millennium, in OPP and Central Lock.
Do you still have the film?
Holy cow.
I got the film back and made my last semester at UC. I included it as part of this experimental film about the life of my alter ego. That's how he dies, is being beaten to death by the cops.
Nice.
Excellent.
Yeah, but that was a great New Year's Day. They wheeled a little TV into the cell block and put The Jerk with Steve Martin on, served his black eyed peas and collard greens.
Really?
But anyway.
Just for luck and money. Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway. But I still came to New Orleans even after that experience.
Okay.
So, and I've never gotten arrested again. So.
All right. So you learned your lesson.
Got it out of my system.
Good.
Jim Jarmusch, great filmmaker.
Yeah. Well, 50-50. I like half his films, but John by Law.
Yeah, well, I've only seen half his films.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of films. That's a Jarmusch film? I didn't know that. You know,
yeah,
that
Down by Law is.
Yeah, you know, Down by Law, definitely.
Like Stranger Than Paradise, obviously.
That's the one he did before that. I really like Only Lovers Left Alive.
I like the one Coffee and Cigarettes a little bit. That's pretty
good.
Yeah,
that's kind of improv. It's kind of like what you guys do, just kind of like off the cuff,
right,
improvisational,
right,
conversations.
But I met him in New York in the 80s, and this is a few years after Down by Law, I think, or maybe a few years before, I'm not sure. But guy has, his apartment was like empty.
Weird.
He had like 2 chairs, a table, and then he had a bed that was, you couldn't see the bed because he had this like curtain around the bed. And it was the weirdest studio apartment I've ever seen. It was crazy. But he's part of this group called the Sons of Lee Marvin. Do you know
that?
Yeah,
I've heard about this, but elaborate, yeah.
Yeah, he's this group, him and some other celebrities and just some other people you don't know, never heard of, but they all like have hair. Or they sound like Lee Marvin.
Yeah, I can see that.
So they started this like group called the Sons. And he gave me his card. This is my card, Manny. The Sons of Lee Marvin.
Nice.
And the other thing was, you know, back then, I don't know how he dresses now, but back then he always just like wore black jeans and a black shirt. He had this
And he has always had that shock of white hair, too.
Right.
Like, it's like Steve Martin, like his hair white.
Yeah, it's always been white. Yeah. Steve Martin's always been 78 years old for like, you know, that kind. But he had this clothes rack with just like all these black shirts and black pants.
Yeah.
It's like, well, that's easy.
Yeah, I mean,
you know, it's
always
easy.
Always fashionable.
All matches. You know,
but Sons of Lee Marvin, check it out.
Nice.
Right, gotta look it up.
So, so you get to New Orleans. What were you planning on making films here? Or
we definitely, because like the last thing I did at USC was steal the 16mm camera from their like warehouse.
Okay.
So I'm like, we're going to New Orleans to start making movies. Didn't quite happen as quickly as that. Because first we had to find jobs.
So where? How do you land? What do you start doing when you get here?
Basically, we just started like looking around, and a friend of mine, Jake Springfield, who'd lived here longer, he's in a band. He was in a band then called High Lie. That, you know, if we get around to Mermaid Lounge, that was a regular band at Mermaid Lounge. He had been teaching in JP as a substitute teacher, so he's like, you can just walk in and do this job. So yeah, I applied at the JP school board or whatever and got a job as like a teacher's aide slash substitute teacher. And like within a week, one of the students aggravated the teacher I was assisting so much, he threw a garbage can at him and got fired. And like the principal's like, well, don't you have a 4-year degree? I'm like, yeah. It's like, you're a teacher now. Because the first year you can teach without any certifications.
Right. Like so a probationary period.
Yeah, it was like September or October of 2000. And they threw me in this classroom, and it was like the John Martin on Shrewsbury, which is like the bad kid school for JP. So it's like an average New Orleans school. But like, I had no idea what I was doing. So we're thrown into that, and it was kind of fun at first. You know, I was teaching math initially, and then the principal was pretty lenient. She just like let us create our own class called Visual Arts, where we like use film and photography to kind of teach something. Because these are bad. Just getting them to sit down and pay attention was a great accomplishment.
Yeah.
So like we talk about math when we were talking about f-stops on a camera and how you have to, you know, take the fractions and change them to get the exposure right. We talk about chemistry and how like you develop photography. We'd have them write stories. If you wanted to write a screenplay, who's like a character in your life you'd want to write about? So we just kind of like watch movies and talk about stories and like talk about the technique of filmmaking and use that to kind of like just get them engaged enough to like get something into their head.
And what grade was this?
Well, they were anywhere, because, you know, a lot of them had held back. So it was anywhere from like 8th to 12th.
Okay.
Some of them were as young as 14.
Showing them?
Like some stuff that you is like obvious, like Do the Right Thing, but then also like The Shining. There were no rules, so like I showed them Blade Runner. They didn't like that one.
Huh.
It was too slow. But yeah, just, you know, we just, you know, watch, and we'd show them some of the student films we had done. It's like, look, you can do this stuff.
Right,
you know, so
we can all be storytellers. That's what the video camera brought.
Exactly.
We can all be storytellers.
So I shot a lot of interviews with them just because a lot of them couldn't, they weren't illiterate, but they couldn't write very well, but they were great storytellers. So I would just have them like, tell me about the meanest person you've ever met. It's like, oh, I know this. And they would tell stories.
They were
like,
the mom.
Yes. But I actually made I made that footage into like a 20-minute documentary because it was just so engaging. Like when it was all over, it's like people aren't going to believe some of this stuff. Some of the crazy stuff these kids would say and do. But, you know, just try, like, again, it was just really frustrating because you'd have one of these kids and kind of get through to them, and then their parents would beat them up or they'd commit a crime and be back in juvenile detention, you know. So it was just like you never felt like you were really accomplishing much, unfortunately.
Yeah, you had a lot of students were involved in the criminal justice system already.
Most of them were on the way into or out of juvie. Like one of them, again, in the documentary, he talks about how, like, he just shot this guy. And he hid all the money that he stole from the guy, and he's like still in like juvenile detention, just on short release to go to school at this place. He's like, I know where that money's at, and when I get out, I'm going to get it. Didn't follow up on that one. I don't know if he ever got out or got the money, but it's hidden somewhere.
Wow. Jimmy Conaway from Goodfellas, he still has that money hidden somewhere.
Yeah.
His daughter knows where it is. He's dead now. His daughter knows where it is. So what did they think of The Shining?
They liked it somewhat. I mean, a lot of them would fall asleep, but, you know, some of them had actually seen it. Like, a couple of them, you know, because it's a pretty venerable picture.
Yeah.
So some of them had seen that one. I'm trying to think back. We watched Goodfellas. They love that one, of course, you know.
Well, who doesn't?
But life, but it's
like
see,
movie.
Crime does pay. It's like, I don't know in the end. Did you watch the ending? But, yeah. It was fun, but like again, it was just it was frustrating, and it really was stressful. Towards the end of the school year, because they all got metal detected every day going in, like one of them threw a gun over the fence and went through the metal detectors and went to retrieve the gun, and luckily the campus cop got wind of it and intervened. But I was like, I don't know about this.
Right.
Yeah.
So how long do you teach for?
One full school year. Because after that, I would have had to start getting qualifications. So between just like the frustrations of it and the idea, it's like, I just got out of school. I don't want to go back to school.
Right. Yeah, I hear you.
I basically went to City Hall and they were hiring for garbage men and firefighters. So I'm like, oh, gee, I don't know. Like, So I applied to the fire department, but it took almost a year to go through all the tests, like the physical agility test, the background check, personality test. So in the meantime, I got on with the New Orleans Public Library.
Oh, okay.
And basically, like, dealt with the adult versions of the kids I had previously taught.
Because
people would come in, like, completely no knowledge of computers. It's like, I need to apply for a job at Harrah's, but I don't know how to use a computer, you know? So, I did that for a year. And
was that the main library?
Yeah, I was at the main library.
That really attracts an interesting crowd over there.
One of my jobs is to sweep the book stacks to try to stop the bums from urinating on the books.
That's always down on Loyola, right?
Yeah. And there'd be latchkey kids that would come in there, and like you got like 12-year-old kids there were no firewalls then, so they'd be looking up porn in like the public computer room. I'm like, you can't do this, kid. Like, you know. So there was a lot of referee work. And then,
what attracted you to fire, though?
Again, like, I was just kind of like, let me just do as many jobs. I've been a teacher. I've been a librarian. Let me try fire department. I wasn't initially going to, like, stick around because I was like, oh, I'll do that for a couple years and then become a park ranger. But,
Films were always there.
Oh, yeah. Because in the meantime, I've been making, you know, I'm not talking about that part of it. Yeah, we were making films. Again, like Jake, the guy that I mentioned from Mermaid Lounge, like we made a music video for his band. That was one of my first projects here. So doing all that stuff by night while during the day, you know, doing civil servant kind of work. Yeah. And also, again, if all you do is like work with film people and watch movies, you are what you eat. So you want like, you know, cross-pollination. It's cool. Like, I've learned a lot more on the fire department about really like running a set than I probably did at USC.
Yeah.
Cause like a fire ground, it's the same thing. Like you've got to learn how to, you know, delegate responsibility and keep the ship, you know, upright and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, these all can inform, you know, your style and also just story wise. Like if you're working with like crazy kids and like other people that have unique interests, because half the firemen I work with are crab fishermen or this or that. So it just gives you a lot more like interesting characters and perspectives to like bring to it than if you're just like, you know, I work in film, I hang out with film people, blah blah blah. It's like Cormac McCarthy, like he's like, I don't want, he's the guy that wrote like Blood Meridian and The Road, Pulitzer Prize winner. Yeah, like he said, I don't want to hang out with other writers, I want to hang out with doctors and physicists and like really. And that's one of the reasons I love New Orleans. Like you can be hanging out with, you know, musicians and lawyers and everything else at a place like Snake and Jake's, you know, and like hear all their stories. But yeah, getting back to like,
well,
the fire department. Oh, sorry.
Let me stop you right there, because looking at the drinks and the clock, it's that time.
All right.
Yeah, it's
break time.
Halfway. Yeah, it's a break time. We take a break. The nation knows what to do, and we'll be right back.
Cool.
There will be no more sorrow. God will be one of us. You can see into the future. The world will be full of trust. Common sense won't be outlawed. Troubles won't chase us down. No one will be
And we're back.
Yes.
Back with Mr. Manny Chevrolet.
Yes, and we're better.
I am Renee Komen.
We're better than Ezra.
Back with our guest, Mr. Jason Affolder.
I got it this time.
Got it.
Nailed it.
And Jason, I know you've heard some of the shows, and so you're kind of familiar with the fact that we're a listener-supported operation here.
We have four listeners.
Yeah. And they take turns supporting us. And last week we had Eddie V sent us in the bag of Kennedy Half Dollars.
That was
showed a lot of flair, a lot of class there.
Uncirculated?
Well, they were circulated. But still, you know, we like that. We're of the people.
And I gave them, you remember how we split them up? Uh-huh. I gave them to our bartender that night.
Oh, wow.
I just said, here, because she was pouring and pouring drinks.
She was pouring, yeah. We'd already paid her, but all right, that was a nice tip.
Well, they were so heavy.
Yeah.
I didn't want
the coinage. Yeah, you forget how cumbersome those coins are.
People used to carry gold around.
Right. I know. Well, while we do appreciate the solid coins, half dollars, silver dollars.
Yeah.
We do have a Venmo and PayPal link that makes it easy. It's all electronic. You hardly even know you're supporting the show, but we know it. And want to give a shout out to Michael Donahue up there in Memphis, who reached out through the Venmo link, and he's buying our cocktails tonight. So thank you very much, Michael.
So
you can, those links are in the show notes of every show and the Facebook pages that we have promoting the show. And also in those the show notes is the Patreon link. You can become one of our beloved patrons.
Yeah.
Also, we have the Troubleman Podcast T-shirt link. And what else? Follow us on Instagram and Facebook, and rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast wherever.
We don't mind your loose change.
No, we don't mind loose change. You can look up Snake and Jake's Christmas Club Lounge in New Orleans, Louisiana, 70118, and it's right there on Oak Street. It's easy to find the address. So we love getting mail at the bar. The Iguanas continue our residency at the Carousel Lounge. That'll be going through September. So if you're coming through town, check that out every Sunday, 7 to 10. It's a real scene over there. All right, well, enough of that. Back to our guest, Jason Affolder.
Yep, got it again.
Got it again.
Two out of three.
Ain't bad. So you were talking about you're getting to New Orleans. You're applying to the fire department.
Mm-hmm.
But also you had mentioned the Mermaid Lounge. This is right when the Mermaid Lounge is still going.
Yeah, it was the last couple of years, but yeah, that was the Mecca. That was the cool spot. It's over there in CBD now. It's the Rusty Nail, I think.
Right. Yeah. But it, at the time there was no development around there. All those warehouses were empty.
Yeah, it was a lot shadier.
It was
hard to find too, because it's all these one-way streets.
Yeah. It was our little clubhouse over there, and they had a whole collection of musicians, artists. You and I were talking about before we started how bands, you couldn't believe some of the stature of some of the bands that would play there, like more avant-garde or alt-rock bands, because New Orleans is not really a rock town so much, you know? It's, if you're coming through, you might play Houston and sell out a club there, or play Atlanta and sell out a club there, and you can't even get booked in New Orleans. So people would play at the Mermaid, even though it was smaller venue, but it was very funky and groovy.
Very intimate, intense, and awesome show.
Had a clientele that would come out and see all these different kind of things, and so you were involved with that, huh?
A little bit, because again, my main contact here, Jake Springfield, was in a band, Highlight, that played there regularly, so, you know, we'd hang out there. I'd take photos for their promotional stuff and ended up doing a music video for them, and then Jake, at the time, was transitioning. I mean, not transitioning. He was changing careers. But because now he's like a full-time cinematographer. So at the time he was doing music, and because I was doing film stuff, some of the first films I was making before I had my own editing system, he was my editor and helped out with a lot of those.
Okay.
So it's like, you scratch my back, I scratch yours. I'll make a music video for you, or shoot your album cover, and you help me edit, you know, some films.
Right.
And so, yeah. And so I worked with him for a long time, until he got too successful, and now he doesn't have time for me.
But, well, yeah.
No, he's awesome, but...
Yeah. Right on.
But anyway, so yeah, that was kind of the first formative years when I was getting on the fire department.
Okay, now, did you meet guys like Henry Griffin?
I didn't really know. I got involved in Time Code NOLA, which is... Henry works with my producer, Aaron Rushen, at UNO, and Randy Perez and Aaron Rushen created this show called Time Code NOLA that was like on Cox once a month.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And that was like the main outlet for local... you know, independent film.
Uh-huh.
So I gave them everything I was working on, and they put it on monthly and do interviews with the filmmakers, and yeah, they did a lot of cool stuff. And it still somewhat has a presence. It's not a monthly show anymore.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, they were kind of like my gateway into like the NOLA film community, those two guys.
Didn't they back then in the early 2000s, wasn't there that, I don't know who was doing it, maybe it was through NOCA or something like that, but It was like this thing. It was like speed films or something. And like you'd write a script on a Friday.
Well, they still do 48-hour films.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I could go into my... I think it's kind of a scam, personally, but I'm not going to badmouth them too much. Because you have to pay them, and then you make a movie, and they make a profit off it, and there's all these stipulations. It's like, why don't you just make your own movie?
Right.
You know, like, I understand the lure of being in a contest, but you've got to, like, use some silly prop and have some random line of dialogue. So it's kind of obvious a lot of times when you... Because I've been, like, reviewing films for a couple film festivals. It's like, this is a 48-hour movie. I can tell.
Right.
Because, again, you don't have the time to finesse it, and there's also, like, a lot of stuff shoehorned in. But, yeah, that the 48-hour film is still a thing.
Still a thing? Really?
And then also, like, Zeitgeist was still on Aretha Castle Haley back then, and they would do monthly open screenings where people would show their works in progress or whatever and get feedback. So there was still a lot of stuff going on that I was like, oh, there is, like, an underground film scene.
Well, the film we did about my first run for mayor.
Mm-hmm.
Giving it to the people.
Manny Chevrolet's run for mayor.
Cool.
We had a three days at Zeitgeist.
Oh, cool, cool. Yeah.
And who was that guy who ran that
place? Rene,
that's...
He's
Rene
awesome.
Bruce
Hart. Now he's in Araby, but it's
right.
A great
they moved
space.
It to
Araby.
Yeah,
it's
they
awesome.
Moved it out to Araby. Yeah, he had said at that time it was probably one of the best 3-day runs they ever had a local film.
People love you, Manny.
Yeah, I guess so.
Just not enough.
Yeah. Well, they love me, then they get to know me.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like they love you. They just don't want to put the city in your hands. Yeah. Apparently. Yeah, so I was just kind of like getting into the film scene, doing like some 16mm films and then doing fire department stuff. And then Katrina kind of like wrecked all of that.
You know,
Well, just because, you know, for years afterwards, a lot of my friends were displaced. Like, I stayed. I was there the whole time.
Okay.
Actually, I just got a big
win. That was a big speed bump and everything,
yeah,
wasn't it?
I mean,
I kind of lost track of
actually,
that.
Actually,
were you a fireman during Katrina?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, and so I feel you had to stay.
Yeah, but I feel a little guilty, but, like, it was the best thing that had happened in my life at that point because I got out of a bad relationship. I earned, like, $20,000 in hazard pay. We were, like, fighting crazy fires and just, like, it was just bizarre. It was, like, the Wild West.
Must have been insane being here and doing EMS stuff and running around.
Yeah, and just the fires were enormous, like, whole city blocks burning.
Right.
I actually gave all my footage. National Geographic's doing a 20th anniversary doc that comes out next month. I gave them the 8 hours of tapes that I recorded. They used a minute and a half of the footage. Only a minute and a half.
Okay.
But they paid me $50 a second.
Oh,
which
that's
is like,
right. You told me this.
Yeah. So, like, yeah, I've yet to see it. I have no idea what they... Because there's all kinds of crazy shit. Firemen drinking in bars, like, heavily armed and, like, you know... But they're probably going to use the Chinook helicopters dropping water on blazing buildings and stuff. But
and
like,
when
yeah.
can we see this?
It's on Disney Plus. I don't know. I think it's just called Katrina, and it's on Disney Plus.
Already?
And National Geographic. I don't know. They said... I got to email the producer because they said it was going to come out in June or July. But I looked the other day, and I hadn't seen anything yet.
Okay.
But it's finished. I got the check. It's real.
And oh, nice.
So it's a pretty comprehensive retrospective documentary.
Well, if it's Disney, you better cash it fast, baby.
It's already spent because I decided to buy a car yesterday. But yeah, but Katrina was like very eye-opening because I was still relatively a rookie firefighter. I only had like 2 years on.
Mm.
And yeah, it was wild. And just
now, who was the boss of the fire department? What is there a commissioner?
There's
or is there a chief?
The superintendent.
Yeah. Who is that today?
Now it's Roman Nelson.
And who was it back then?
McCrossin? Is that the guy?
Well, McCrossin was the guy who was there forever. He was already gone when I got on.
Okay.
And then there were a couple temporary ones, and then there's a guy that whose name I will not mention because he's very hated.
Okay.
But yeah, there was a guy that kind of transitioned during Katrina, but like they, you know, they were kind of aloof and in their own world. Like literally, like we were all staged on the West Bank in this old folks' home, and when a fire would break, I'd be like, anyone? Anyone want to fight a fire? And like there was no rhyme or reason. Like the same guys like me, the ball busters, the guys that wanted to do it would all fight every fire, and the guys just wanted to hide out and not deal with it. There was no, you know, it was like the core group of like 30 to 50 guys out of the hundreds that would like do all the work.
It's funny how life is like that, though. I mean, don't you find that they always say the thing about if you want something done, give it to ask a busy person.
Yeah,
it's like the people who have a motor, you know, will say, yeah, I'll do that.
And, no, it wasn't like after Katrina. I remember it was a big issue for a long time, the owed overtime pay to firefighters.
Well, wasn't yeah, that that's kind of, well, there's
is that
a whole,
still going
there
on?
There was an old lawsuit that I wasn't really involved in. Like, it's pretty boring.
Yeah,
but like,
yeah,
it was kind of settled, but it didn't really have much effect on me.
Okay.
Some kind of pension bullshit.
Yeah. Right. I was on the. I think I got like a $50 check out of it. But there were guys that were owed like tens of thousands of dollars.
Yeah.
Okay. It was like this ongoing litigation. That
so
took,
it's already it's done.
Yeah. They took a. Yeah. They made a deal.
The wife and I were talking about it earlier today.
Yeah. It was a very contentious, long, drawn out process. And then the union made a deal that was kind of a sweetheart deal for the city that pissed off a lot of people. But hey, you got something. You want to? Because these guys were dying. Like guys were so old, they were dying before they got their checks.
Yeah.
You know. So it's like if we don't settle this, it could go on another decade or two.
Right. Yeah.
So they were like, that was the best way to get out of it. So
right on.
So you started making more than minimum wage, basically.
Well, that's a whole different thing. They gave us, now we kind of have competitive pay. Like, I'm doing okay, but the new rookies, it's life sucks for them, you know. And they've got to work a 40 years for a pension. Like, I'm still on a 30-year
really?
Plan. So even if you start when you're
40 years?
Fighting fires?
Yes,
you got a
exactly. if you want the full pension.
Well,
like,
yeah.
Like, if you want 100%, because I can get 100% when I'm, you know, 30 years on. But these new guys, they're kind of...
But firefighters love to cook, because I see you guys at the market every week.
Yeah, there's some great cooks. Incredible. Yeah. Like, you know, I always thought my grandma was a good cook, and then I met a bunch of firemen. Because you got nothing to do all day if there's not an emergency. I mean,
right.
We're ready
well,
to go,
it.
But, like, you know, you can go to the store and get everything and like, spend all afternoon cooking it, and yeah, some incredible chefs and some terrible ones, but
yeah.
Now everyone takes turns cooking.
Captain Roxanne, she's an excellent cook. She cooks probably 75% of the time. I do some like exotic dishes like curry or chicken adobo or
stuff
like
you've
that.
Learned in your travels
or been inspired by. Yeah,
yeah.
So you know, but I'm probably like a once a month kind of cook.
Okay,
but you know.
Now, Manny mentioned your travels. Now I read something in your bio that were you, in fact, born on a freight train?
No, my dad's a freight train engineer.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
So I grew up around trains. So
all right, Brother Dave, there's the star
slight
of the show
exaggeration.
Right now, walking in. Okay, but you have traveled extensively around the world.
And you've documented it all.
Yeah, I've got... But that's the two things, like... You know, I'm a filmmaker, but like I also love photography, especially when I'm traveling. Like, because you know, if you're traveling, you might not have a cohesive idea for like a film or documentary when you're. But a single image can be so indelible. So I actually prefer to shoot still photography when I'm traveling, because you can't have. You know, if you've got a script, you know you can make a film out of it. But like I've traveled to some countries and it became a documentary, the video footage I shot. But sometimes you don't quite get a cohesive product out of that, whereas like if you're shooting stills, you can have some incredible singular moments that still like tell a story in those four in that frame.
Right.
So when I travel, I'm more in kind of still photography mode.
So when did these travels start? Because I saw you sent me some of your information and
yeah,
I briefly looked at it.
I basically went to Cuba. Like it was, you weren't supposed to go to Cuba in like 2001. You're
right.
Still not supposed to, but me and my buddy were going to Cuba. So we went to Cuba, and that was awesome, and I kind of caught the bug. And so, like, every year since then, you know. And then
what
it got,
year was that?
That was 2001.
Okay. So
it's been, like, 24 years.
Yeah, you've just been traveling.
So you go somewhere exotic every year?
Try to, yeah. I mean, you know, obviously things were, like, a monkey wrench got thrown into it with the pandemic.
Right.
I did a lot of U.S. road trips during that period. But that actually sent me spiraling into a lot more, like, extreme places. Like, I went to Yemen and Afghanistan Syria and all these places, because when you got a civil war or like some sort of chaos, like a virus doesn't really matter. So you couldn't go to England without like having to like, you know, be locked up in a hotel.
But you
could go to Afghanistan.
And you went to Afghanistan?
Yeah. Like
really?
It's like the year after the Taliban took back over.
What was that like?
Honestly, like because their Pashtun like culture, like it's basically like if your enemy admits defeat, like you hold no grudge. So because the U.S. pulled out and the Taliban took over again, they were just like, we don't hold in, you know, there's no bad blood.
No shit.
It was a hell of a lot safer when there was an ongoing war. I mean, because there was no open conflict anymore.
Uh-huh.
And even the guide there, he's like, you know, is this is a bad piece because the Taliban are back in charge and they're not very nice to a lot of people. But
right.
It's better than a good war where people were dying like en masse. You know, U.S. soldiers being bombed and like civilians getting killed in firefights and stuff.
Right.
So, you know, it's not the ideal situation, especially if you're a liberal or an upwardly mobile woman. But people aren't, you know, it's not the same kind of
open
violence.
Wasn't dangerous for you.
Oh, no. We had, you know, because again, they want to be a respected government that's taken seriously. So they're not going to let, you know, some tourists
good
get
luck
killed.
With that.
Yeah, good luck with that.
Well, that's still their approach.
Now, did
though.
You score some good heroin, though, in Afghanistan?
No, I wasn't on the market for that. But it's out there. The opium fields are in operation.
Yeah.
You know, because that's
man,
like.
You'd hate to wind up in an Afghani prison.
Yeah, no. I did go to a Cuban jail for a night, but that was like. anyway.
Really?
We were staying on the third story of this building, and there were two buildings next to it. There were like steps, you know, going up. So I'm like coming home drunk. This is in Santiago de Cuba, and I'm like, I'm going to climb up to our apartment on the top floor. So I just like climbed
up.
Because
you're a firefighter.
Yeah, I was just like, I'm just going to do it. And then like somebody saw me through a window, thought I was a prowler, and started screaming. So like guys come out and grab me, and the cops show up, and like... I didn't speak any Spanish then, so they took me to, like, first, like, my arm got injured, so they took me to a hospital, and the doctor there spoke English, and I explained what happened. Then they were going to take me to jail, and we were, like, my friend was leaving the next day. We were supposed to leave, so he's like, I don't know what to do. Like, Jason's in a Cuban jail, and I have to fly back to the U.S. But luckily, the guy we were staying with, he was a dentist, he went and talked to them and bribed him, like, $50 and got me out of it, explaining that I was just a drunk asshole tourist.
Dumbass, yeah.
Dumbass American.
But, yeah, Cuban jail, I'm like, this is how it's going to end, huh?
Oh, God.
And I've mostly learned after that incident.
Like and Castro's brother was still running.
Castro was still alive then.
Castro
was still alive in 2001, right. Yeah.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Oh, well.
But yeah, I don't know. The travels, just, I'm just trying to see everything I can before it gets blown up, you know?
Where have you gone recently?
In the last year, I've been to Syria, Libya, Norway.
Really? What's going on in Libya, man?
Libya is kind of reunited because, you know, there's a civil war and like, because I went to like Benghazi.
It's like a failed state, you know?
No, right? But you say that, but the central government, like in Tripoli, is functional and like they're, it's not completely. Fixed.
It's better than New Orleans, though, right?
Well, the infrastructure is definitely better. Even Benghazi, where like the buildings are like all in rubble, like the streets are better
than New Orleans.
Yeah, exactly.
I knew they would be.
A lot of, like, I went to Haiti, and like it was like 5 years after the earthquake that leveled that country, and the roads are better in Haiti. You know.
Well, you know, I've said this before on the podcast. You know, that there's this bumper sticker that people have in New Orleans that says like "Third World" and proud of it.
Yeah.
And I always say, Third World is aspirational for New Orleans. This is failed state level,
and
man.
It's even gotten worse.
Well,
is the
Third
whole thing.
World, the kids know how to read and write.
Well, that is the thing. You go to places like Cuba, and it's like, yeah, it's not working completely functionally, but the education level is definitely superior. Like
now in Cuba, though, they still have all those great American cars.
Yep. Yeah.
And it's crazy when you open when you pull the hood up, it's like some Russian engine, though. Right. Like it's all been, they're all just like facades on the outside. But yeah,
the
they're everywhere.
That's cool.
That's one of the incredible attractions. It's awesome.
And the cigars.
But, yeah, good cigars, good
now,
rum.
Now, when you got arrested, what were you drinking? Cuban rum? What were you drinking?
I don't know. Yeah, it was like a lot of rum. Because we met these local guys that took us to like an underground hip-hop show, and like it was a wild night. It was like our last night before we like had to go back to Havana and fly out. So like I just overdid it and acted stupid. And, all right. But
good times.
But good stories. If you survive, it's a good story. It's worth the pain.
Now, what about any and all these travels? Because I mean, you've been a lot of places. What any romances? What are the best romances you ever had?
Not really. Because
don't say Thailand or Costa Rica.
No.
All right.
No, like usually when I've traveled, I'm either with a woman or like have a woman waiting for me back home, like Penelope waited for Odysseus.
Okay.
Yeah, I haven't really like classic. I haven't really chased a lot of women when I travel.
Probably you're better,
you never know what you're walking into.
Yes.
Some
kind of ruse.
Yeah.
But it'd be nice to have a place, let's say if you have to leave the country, you know, there's
like a woman in every port.
Yeah.
I never thought about that. Yeah. But I don't know. I guess that should be my next goal.
About, Jason.
Getting kind of old though, you know. So
no, but, we're getting kind of old. You still got a lot of time.
Some tread on the tire.
Yeah.
Well, we just had our czar of the Klempire, Dave Clemens, walk in. Now, your most recent project involves Dave Clemens, huh?
A couple of them actually do, because we did like a 30th anniversary Snake and Jake's ad that's kind of a spoof on law firm ads. Like, if you
hilarious.
Were
anybody,
oh, yeah, I saw that today.
If you were anybody you know has contracted a flesh-eating bacteria from sitting on the filthy furniture, call us and we'll get you what you deserve. So we did that kind of on a whim, and Dave was in that. And then this other one, The Great Davini, he plays the grandfather character. Because basically I wanted like a Harry Dean Stanton kind of guy, but Harry Dean Stanton's dead. And then,
but Dave Clemens,
he's still
is
alive.
Exactly.
He is like
Harry Dean Stanton,
the heir apparent. Like I'm telling you, if there's filmmakers out there, you could get. Like, he's like, well, he's more like Matthew McConaughey crossed with, you know, Harry Dean Stanton.
Sure,
almost as handsome, but a little crusty, you know, in a good way. So
yeah.
But yeah, Great Davini is inspired by me wanting to be a magician when I was a kid. You know, this like young boy who you know wants to be like a card trick magician finds a real spell book. that's his grandfather's, who was a real musician, and that these spells actually work. So it changes his life in both dark and light ways.
Huh, so, interesting. So did you actually want to be a tabletop magician as
a child? Like in middle school, like I've got, like I still do some awesome card tricks.
Oh, yeah.
And stuff like that. But it's just kind of inspired by that. Because my grandfather was very influential in my life, and I lost him and like had this like idea of like, you know, if I could just like find him again, you know, or like say, you know, have one last conversation with him. So that kind of inspired that film. And it's a short, because I've done a couple of features, but lately I've just been doing shorts because I love to do features, but they're really expensive. Yeah. And like the idea is like you spend 2 years making a feature and somebody watches it and it's like, oh, I really love that. Or like, yeah, it was okay. Or you could spend 9 months making a short and people will watch it and say, I love that, or it's okay. So like there's just so much invested in making a feature. Now there is definitely a lot more potential to make money off of a feature, because the one feature I've got in distro, it's like on Amazon and Tubi and stuff. It's called, it was A Quiet Storm, and they changed it to Ninth Ward Justice to make it sound more salacious. Yeah. I get a little bit of money from that.
Okay.
And I'm very proud of that film. But like since that one, I've been doing a lot of shorts because I can just change genres and stuff, and you're not investing like everything into like one project that could make or break you.
Well, right. I was at Carrollton Station a few weeks ago, watched.
Yeah, we showed it like an hour cycle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, I forget the name of the one about the one, the guy who's just walking around, he's drifting, and
yeah, it's called Crepitus. That's like the surreal swamp nightmare.
It seemed like the theme to your shorts and those longer ones, like that one.
Mm-hmm.
There's something, you're into the horror in many ways.
I got on a horror kick. Like those definitely fall more into horror, but like, again, the two features that I've done, Sundogs is sort of like a slice of life in New Orleans, like this like down on his luck teacher who's like donating plasma and is kind of mentoring this latchkey kid who desperately needs a father figure, falls for like a, you know, a bartender artist, or she's a, you know, like a server artist.
Right.
So like, you know, that's very realistic and kind of like that post Katrina Onway malaise that everybody was in. That kind of captures that. And then Ninth Ward Justice is like a gritty kind of like in the style of The Wire, kind of like, you know, gritty crime drama focused on this family. So I kind of go through phases. Crepitus is definitely more like horror nightmare.
Yeah, because my wife and I were saying there's a theme here all night. Even the Dave Clemens commercial was terrifying.
I love
the scene where it's like, if you get a guy who talks to you too much, it's just Dave talking, and these girls are sitting there going...
It's like, if you or anyone you know has been subjected to a conversation lasting more than 4 hours with Dave Clemens, you may be entitled compensation.
Yeah. Hey, buddy.
Exactly. Hey, buddy.
So, I go through phases. So I kind of got on a gritty track. I did a couple, kind of crime New Orleans, and then lately I've been doing more
that one. I thought was really well done. I enjoyed it a lot.
Which one?
Crepitus.
Yeah, that's one of the ones I shot with a stolen camera from USC.
You were saying that.
But and that's actually the 20th anniversary this year of that one. That's why I showed it, because it's like we made
it
this
shot
far
here.
The swamps all around. Like we shot all over the place. Like any place I could find, like an abandoned warehouse or this or that.
Well, that's
in the swamp.
What it comes down to, like. Guerrilla filmmaking is the way it's done.
Use what you can find and what you can utilize.
Yeah.
And
if someone says you can have this space for 5 hours, then take it.
Or you just shoot when they're not paying attention. But, lately I've been doing, like, the last couple of films are ostensibly kids' movies, like Great Davini and the Crepe Creep. But there's, like, you know, there's a deeper meaning to them, at least for me, you know. So, you know, I just go through phases. And lately I've just kind of, like, again, the apex of sort of like the New Orleans crime thing was this Quiet Storm, Ninth Ward Justice film. And I'm like, I don't want to make another movie like that, you know? So I just shifted gears. I did one that was like a one-act play about a rock band that's on their best tour ever, but they're like falling apart at the seams and like everything goes to shit in the green room after their best show of the tour.
Uh-huh.
You know?
Sounds like my band.
I did one set here at Snake and Jake's called Old Crows about like a crusty Vietnam vet who's like drinking his life away and meets this young writer. And kind of she gives him a new lease on life, you know, just kind of inspiring him to like, why don't you use the time you got left instead of just. So, they're all kind of different. And again, the horror track that I was on, there's one that's based on, you see the ghost bikes all over New Orleans,
because I've
responded to a lot of that stuff. Like, at a, you know, fire department, we see the worst of the worst.
Oh,
so there
I
was
bet.
Like an incident that happened. I wasn't first up on that one, but I heard the story and that inspired this like horror movie. It's a ghost story set around a ghost bike. Like this girl's kind of haunted by this guy who died in an incident like that and kind of like compelled to like finish his like life's work
Well, you know, you can't ride a bicycle in New Orleans. That's just what it comes down to.
They've got bike lanes, but not everybody recognizes
it. It's not safe. I mean, you can barely drive in a car. I mean
I responded to the Endymion massacre.
Oh,
you know, like, was it, he injured at least 6 people and killed 3, I think. And
yeah,
we were the first ones
on
scene.
On Esplanade.
He just drove through the bike lane drunk after Endymion and just, like, wiped people out.
Yeah.
And his dad was a big shot for the NOPD, wasn't he?
Yeah, I think he's in the clink, though. He didn't get out of it, I don't think. But
No. He's still in jail.
Well,
you know, the wife and I were walking back from the Endymion.
Yeah, you were right there.
We saw the cops had him, the guy.
Yeah, because he finally wrecked near Broad. Because that's the only thing that stopped him is he finally wrecked. He was like plowing through everybody.
But they had him handcuffed and sitting on a curb, and we walking home, and we just saw this guy like scream. It was like,
yeah, he's obviously out of it.
Yeah, and got home and turned on the TV, and we're seeing this story go on. And fortunately, a friend of ours who lives in the neighborhood, her partner is a nurse.
Mm-hmm.
They were at Cafe de Gaga.
Yeah, that's right, where the worst of it happened.
The whole thing.
Yeah, like one girl like was on the sidewalk outside of Terra Nova's.
And her partner ran out and started trying to, you know, get people, you know, what they call CPR and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And she lost a few people, but, you know, she's in that business. You know?
Yeah, I mean...
Well,
that's what we deal with.
Yeah, you must see that all the time. Huh? I mean,
like fire department, I see dead people all the
time.
Yeah, I mean, seriously, it's like
now does that have a deleterious effect on you?
It's actually made me more because I used to love like gory horror movies, and I'm a lot more sensitive to it now, having seen the real thing. Like usually people get like desensitized. But, like, honestly, when I watch, like, really, like, you know, gore porn movies, like, it's like, ugh, like, it affects me more because I've seen the real results.
Right.
And that's actually one of the scripts I'm trying to get made. It's a feature. It's, like, basically a ghost story. This rookie firefighter almost dies at one of his first fires, and all kinds of horrible things start happening to people around him. Because, again, like, a lot of these incidents in that script are, like, it's like a horror movie sometimes, and you see, you know, people trapped or, like, burned up bodies, and, like, there's all kinds of stuff like that that definitely, I've got them all written down if I ever want to, like, put together a memoir one day just for my own sake to keep the facts straight.
But
there's a lot of goofy things too, but like, you know,
and you must also see a lot of really heroic shit, man, like you know, like obviously
once in a while
really
work
a day
again
for,
it's a thing like they're the firemen I know are gonna like do the right thing and do the great job. Like people I know on the West Bank, it's like, where do you live? All right, this day, you've got good fire protection. This day, I don't know about that crew. But like here uptown, like here around Snake and Jake's, all the crews at the firehouses around here are solid.
Yeah.
But I could tell some people, it's like, if you live in that neighborhood on certain days, try to put the fire out yourself. Cause,
well, that's good. I live 6 blocks from here.
Yeah,
so
you're good. You're totally good.
Where's the firehouse around here?
Carrollton and Claiborne. I was there for 15 years.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
I was there for a long time, and then
the one on Carrollton by
the Walgreens.
Yeah, next to
right where the streetcar ends. Okay. It's called Carrollton Station, you know, Engine 25. That's a great firehouse. And then I worked at the one in Mid City. Looks like a Swiss Chalet, Engine 35. It's one of the oldest.
Yeah,
the
Tudor firehouse.
It looks like it's 110 years old. Yeah, it's amazing. It's got an old pole and like a shed in the back where they keep the horses in the hay, like when they pull the steamer pump with horses. That one's awesome. And now I'm on Magazine Street, like right in the heart, like, you know, by Rendezvous Tavern, and that's another good
by what
fire. Rendezvous Tavern.
I don't know where those.
It's on
where
Magazine. Yeah, Rendezvous Tavern. It's
or I always relate where it's the closest bar. But you know, it's
makes
like
sense.
But it's by Joey K's. You know the restaurant Joey K's.
Yes, I do. Yeah,
it's
yeah. Okay.
Catty corner from Joey K's.
Oh, all right, cool.
So yeah, and again, the good crews, the great crew that I work with. So. I don't know. I'm sticking with it. It's the fire torrents are good to me. I've been able to make all these movies and travel and just, and again, at the end of the day, I'm not just some artsy fartsy asshole. Like sometimes I actually get to help people. So it kind of balances me out.
Doing God's work. No, I got to say, I've been robbed by the police, but I've never been robbed by a fireman.
Oh,
so,
there's those things happen. Like we had a fire at the, in the Holly Grove at a meat market. And when we got back, like the guy I was working with, like pulled all these frozen steaks out of his pocket. It's like, what? Everything was going to defrost. So.
Now, I don't know if you ever heard any old timers tell this story, and we're kind of on the downslope of the podcast. But when I was a kid, there was this horrible plane crash in Kenner, you know, out of Moisant, you know, out of Louis Armstrong, as it's called now, and they were going to Las Vegas, and it was a storm, and they had a wind shear, and the plane was pushed down, and the whole thing blew apart. Everybody died, but everybody was carrying cash.
Oh, I didn't hear about
Vegas.
This. Wow.
And apparently the story is the firemen, I mean, you know, they're trying to help people.
Well, that's
but,
Kenner. I mean, what do you expect?
Yeah, yeah. I remember just like there was cash everywhere. Just
flowing through.
Yeah.
My friend claims he was at a fire, like had a fire at his house, and he claims the firemen stole a bunch of cash. I don't know. I've never stolen anything. Actually, one time we had a fire and it was like really grueling and hot, and I opened the fridge and there were like a bunch of cold Blue Moons, and I'm like, I need a fucking beer. So I drank one of their beers just because it was like.
Now, do you know any firemen? Because you see this in like movies. There's always like movies about firefighters and stuff, and it's always this one character who smokes like constantly.
My first captain, Chuck Brockmeyer, was that dude. He would go in without a mask on, but he'd just have a cigarette like a filter.
Oh, really?
He died of mesothelioma. So I mean, well, yeah. You know, but he was that guy. He just like, we're going in, kid. It's like, you don't put your mask on. It's like, I don't need a mask. That kind of an attitude. Oh. Again, even his name, Chuck Brockmeyer.
Yeah, like, exactly.
It's like action.
Yeah. Like you saw The Towering Inferno, right?
Yeah,
you've seen
yeah.
That
years
movie.
Ago, but yeah. I've seen it.
He has that character, fireman is kind of that guy.
There's still a few of those guys that are the fireman's firemen, but they're fewer and farther between, you know?
Sure.
Yeah, because there was that movie Backdraft. I remember that.
Backdraft and Ladder 49 are sort of the touchstone.
Yeah, like, there's always that one character, I think Scott Glenn in Backdraft.
Yeah.
You know, they're cleaning up a fire, and he's just sitting there dragging on cigarettes and stuff. And he ends up being the
hey, don't spoil it! No. Yeah. For the, like, two people that have never seen that movie?
Yeah.
I don't think I've seen it.
It's flamboyant, but it's, you know, it's watchable. You know, Kurt Russell, it's awesome.
Yeah, Kurt Russell's. Like De Niro's very good with Sutherland.
Yeah.
Scene with Sutherland.
Oh, yeah,
really
it's sort of
good.
Like the Hannibal Lecter, Jodie Foster
kind of
parallel.
That's a good scene, but you know, the scene where Billy Baldwin's doing it on top of the fire truck.
Well, that actually happened. Well,
that's happened before.
Oh, there's a firehouse, Engine 9 on Esplanade Avenue. Like, all kinds of things have happened there. Again, this is before my time.
Oh, okay.
So it's a secondhand story, but they blacked out the windows and formed some lesbian sex scene on the back of the fire truck. So that stuff happens.
Okay.
Now they got cameras everywhere, so it's much less likely.
I see a short. But,
so, anyway.
I see a short.
I think we're kind of wrapping it up.
Are we done?
Huh? Yeah.
Listen, Jason, always a pleasure to see you.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah.
I wish you just had something to talk about, man.
Yeah. <run out>. Yeah. I'm glad when it's over because I've just
all right. Real quickly before we end this, how many countries have you been to?
Yeah, depending on how you count, around 80.
Do you
count Wales and Scotland and England as separate countries or the UK?
Why
is
not?
Vatican City a country? Because
the Pope thinks it is.
Considered so. Yeah, so around 80.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Where do you want to go back to?
I really love Ethiopia. I love Argentina. I just got back from Taiwan, and that was amazing. Yeah,
really?
Just the food and just, like, it's so easy to get around. I mean, there's a ton of places I love. I mean, even, like, more traditional places like Scotland and Ireland, I'd go back a million times.
Would you want to be buried in one of those countries, or you want to stay here in the U.S.?
I would like to emigrate, possibly. I got friends in Ecuador and Mexico that are living life, you know, really well. So, I don't know. We'll see. You know, we'll see what the world is like. Every day is different.
Right,
you know?
Right.
We'll see if some of these places exist.
Yeah, you get to retire in 30 years, so it's...
I'm 47. I can retire in like 3 to 8 years, depending on how like much I want to try to like get out of the system. But but these are serious questions because I like New Orleans, but I just want to come here in March and October. I don't want to be here in July.
If I have an emergency and need to call with 911, should I ask for you?
No.
No? Okay.
Because I might not be there.
Okay. But, You'll be in Taiwan.
Or, you know, I'm going to Moldova in August. Okay. I'm going to Transnistria, the breakaway state that's like 1980s. It's frozen in time. It's like 1980s Soviet Union era. They have like a big national parade with tanks.
Let me be the first
and men
one.
In big hats. Yeah.
Let me be the first one to say it's been nice knowing you. You got dental charts?
Again, I'm telling you, I've felt more endangered in New Orleans than I have at any of the places I've ever been.
Clearly.
Like
on a bad
night when you got three guys walking and you feel like you're being triangulated and it's like, holy shit, they're casing me.
My children have gone overseas, all these places that people go, aren't you scared for them going there? I'm like, We live in New Orleans. No,
yeah,
I'm
if you can
not
make
scared.
It New Orleans and you have the wherewithal and situational awareness of New Orleans, you can get by anywhere.
Well, you made it at USC for 4 years, so yeah.
I mean,
you did all right.
Nothing bad happened there, so
right on.
There you go.
All right.
So.
Well, Jason, thank you so much. It's been such a pleasure, man. Sure. And as always on the Troubled Men podcast, we like to say trouble never ends.
But Jason, the struggle continues. Good night.
Always. Thank you.
Good night.
Baby's on fire. Better throw her in the water. Look at her lopping like a heifer to the slaughter. Baby's on fire, and all the laughing boys are bitching, waiting for photos. Oh, the plot is so bewitching. Necessary for her learning. If you be my flotsam, I could be half the man I used to. They said you were hot stuff, and that's what babies be reduced to.
it's all that